What if Jesus had never been born? Years ago, I had the privilege to co-write a book with that title. The late Dr. D. James Kennedy and I wrote it. And for those not familiar with the book, it's really all about, because Jesus was born, look at all these positive things in history and even at the present time. Well, today we're going to talk with Craig Forrest, who is a cameraman, and now he's an author and speaker and lecturer, speaking even in universities and so forth. And he's available at craigforrest.com. Forrest is with two R's. But he has seen the world all over the place and even videotaped the world, and definitely can see and note the difference between where there is Christian influence or where there has been Christian influence, where there has been no Christian influence to speak of, or where it has been completely erased. Craig, welcome to the program.
It is great to be here. Great to talk to you. We haven't talked in a few years, and it's great to reconnect, you bet.
Yes. By the way, I listed you as an author a moment ago. I think was that correct, or you write some, right?
Yes, I've written two books. One, my first book was a book on Scottish cinema, because I have a master's degree in film studies and an interest in Celtic film. And I wrote a book on a very good director, Alexander McKendrick. And then the other book was a much more practical book, Commando Tactics for Digital Filmmakers, which is available on Amazon and through my website as well. And that's more of a practical approach on media production, film, TV, documentaries, and short films.
Now, we hired you, we being what is now called D. James Kennedy Ministries, back in the day, about 15 years ago. We were working on a documentary for the book, What If Jesus Had Never Been Born? And we hired you to shoot for us, to videotape for us, certain things, including in India and then also in Paris. And describe for us a little bit, like, for example, in India, there's the Holy Ganges River. Now, here's a country that has had some Christian influence, but even that's been persecuted a lot. And describe for us the Ganges River and what you saw yourself there, and including a funeral pyre, P-Y-R-E.
You have an excellent memory. It's probably because you got to look at the footage a lot, and that stored it away in your brain and also in the edit suite. Yeah, the Ganges is one of the most incredible experiences. I've been now twice to the city of Varanasi, which is the holy of holies for Hinduism. It's like a Muslim going to Mecca or a Catholic going to Rome or the Vatican. Mm-hmm. Varanasi is a pilgrimage that Hindus are required, if possible, to make in their lifetime, and to come down to these steps, which are called ghats, and especially on a festival day. And there they will do a baptism. If a body dies, they will either have it a funeral pyre as well. I saw that.
Which means burning that corpse.
Yes, absolutely. That, because there's a belief that life is a circle in Hinduism, and a person is, the soul goes on to another body in another lifetime. And in all that, there's a tremendous amount of devotion in India. The vast majority are Hindu. A smaller percentage, perhaps 15% or Muslim. And then Christianity, Jerry, is maybe 1% of a nation that's over 1 billion people.
Wow.
So we're talking maybe just 10 million people out of 1.1, 1.2 billion people. Christianity does not have the effect in India as much as Hinduism. And also Christianity in India is usually predominantly in the southern part of the country rather than the north. But going back to Varanasi, it is just interesting from both a filmmaker standpoint and especially from a spiritual standpoint as a Christian who believes in Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord, to watch the great devotion of people baptizing themselves, immersing themselves in this terribly polluted river. But to them, the waters come from the mountains far, far above, and because of that, it's considered holy water, whether it's polluted or not. And I sometimes wonder if we Christians could be as devoted as some Hindus are in their honoring of their gods and goddesses and in their daily life of practicing their spiritual faith and religion.
The reason I asked you to shoot a funeral pyre is because one of the impacts of Christianity in history, and it's really an important point, is that it was the practice of the Hindus to have the widow of a man be burned alive. She would voluntarily throw herself on the husband's funeral pyre so she would be burned, or she was often forced to do so. And Vishal Mangalwadi, who's a Christian Hindu scholar, I mean, former Hindu, or at least he's a Christian now, that I know, and he's from India, and he said that a lot of times what would happen is these young girls would be forced to marry these older men, and then the men would die, and then this was, in a sense, their form of Social Security. You know, well, we don't have to worry about paying her off because she would die. And the word sati meant good woman. Well, it was Christianity, and specifically the work of William Carey, the great missionary to India, who agitated to the British government saying, this practice must be stopped. It is so inhumane. And it took them a long time to get it stopped, but it did stop. And so sati is no longer the practice. And so every time you see an Indian woman, especially an older one, you could thank God that she wasn't killed because Christian influence was felt there in India, even though, as you say, the Christians are a very, very small minority.
Right. Yeah, you could literally thank God that you're still alive. Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting. I was able to shoot, and I think I was able to send that on to you, Jerry, the actual pulpit in the church that William Carey preached in. That was his church, his pulpit. He was actually a very short man. There was a bench behind it so that he could stand up tall enough so that people could see him. And that's in the city of what was Calcutta, and now renamed back to its older older name and term, Kolkata. And Carey had a great deal of influence, as you've alluded to, in changing practices that had gone on for thousands upon thousands of years, and were
inhumane,
entrenched into Hindu society and into culture.
Well, they say that basically the charities for helping the lower caste people, those were all started by Christians. The universities that have been founded in India were all basically started by Christians. And William Carey and others, but especially William Carey, actually first transliterated the vast majority of the languages in India, other than Hindi and, of course, Sanskrit, which predates Christianity. But anyway, those languages were first set to writing by William Carey and others in order to translate the Bible into Urdu or into Telugu or, you know, some of these other languages. And it's amazing the positive impact of Christianity, even in a country where, again, as you say, the percentage of Christians there is very small.
Right. And you know what? As you were talking, I began thinking about William Carey and other missionaries like him. And for anyone that has a calling to go to a country where there's resistance to the gospel of Jesus Christ, it's going to take relationships and it's going to take years. We go in many times as Christians, especially Western Christians, and we want quick, instant successes in turning around a culture or becoming an influencer of those cultures. And in case of with William Carey, it took decades and decades of planting himself in the country of India to have influence. And there were times that he grew very dejected because it wasn't going how he thought it could, and he wasn't having the influence at the start that he wanted. And it took many, many decades, a lifetime, for him to finally, you know, to have something like sati changed around, something that literally saved hundreds of thousands, if not millions of lives over the last 100-150 years.
Yes, that's a very, very good point. I remember somebody was saying how by the time he died or something, the number of converts that he had was just very, very small. But then the next generation and the next generation, and after that, the number of Christians grew substantially. So the work that he did was not in vain. That's the great thing about serving Jesus Christ. that, you know, the results might not be quick, but the big picture, in the big picture, you may be making a huge difference. I love that quote from John Quincy Adams, duty is ours, results are God's. Craig Forrest is our guest right now. Craig Forrest has been all around the world. How many countries have you been in as a cameraman?
As a cameraman, well, I'm also a director, but as a director, cameraman, producer,
yeah, everything,
shot,
whatever, any role.
Yeah, whatever role, whatever hat. 108 countries, and then total travel to 149. That just happened a month or two ago to the little country of Andorra. So I'm pretty close to 150. Sometime this year or next, I'll hit that mark and see where we go from there. There's no great idea to see everything in the world. You just take it like a great meal, one course at a time.
Now, you have often gone, these countries, you said 108, where you actually were working there in some capacity, usually as a visitor, but you were videotaping or filming or doing something related to generally Christian media production, correct?
Yeah, the vast majority of it has been Christian media. There's a small slice that has been for recognizable networks and for cable channels, Discovery Channel and Travel Channel, those kind, where those are secular assignments. And I've maybe 20% would be secular.
Oh, wow.
The other 80% was primarily
serving
for missions agencies and for Christian organizations, evangelistic groups, et cetera. So, you know, to go in as an outsider, first of all, you hope to have the ground support of people helping you once you get there. But, Jerry, I've been to a number of countries where they were so restrictive in getting in as a Christian and even going around to videotape, you know, Morocco and some of the places in North Africa and the Middle East, even parts of Africa could be very, very difficult to work in. And I'd have to go in, Jerry, by myself. Mm. The organization would say, hey, we're sending you, but there's nobody we're going to put you in touch with locally because we don't want them to be compromised by their identity being known because it's such a difficult place. So there was and has been an aspect of risk and an aspect of danger. And my goodness, you talk about my prayer life ramping up and being stronger. There are times I've been on the plane about to land somewhere and said, dear Jesus, you just, Holy Spirit, go in front of me and help me get through customs. Help me to get through baggage control and immigration and everything and grab a car or a taxi and get to a hotel tonight and then be successful in capturing the stories that I need to capture to show what God is doing in this place and in this country. It can be, it's been a risky proposition a number of times.
Mm. So you've obviously traveled to Islamic countries. You mentioned Morocco.
Yes.
Tell us about, here's a country or a series of countries where the Christian influence is suppressed at best. Tell us about what is life like there in those different countries.
Do you want me to concentrate on one, or would you like me to kind of do a regional aspect to it?
Whatever you want.
Okay, let's do regional. In North Africa and the Middle East, in some countries it's so restricted that it is illegal for a person to be a Christian. Illegal. You are not allowed to be a Christian, or the other aspect is, or to convert to Christianity from Islam, from being a Muslim.
That is a death sentence in many cases, you know.
Exactly. And so to be a Christian, you have to do it so quietly that no one will know, or like you've said, you'll either be expelled from the country or most likely be persecuted in some way, either beaten up or killed, or imprisoned for your faith. It's almost like stepping back to the first century Christianity in the church.
Wow.
So when I go in as a director cameraman with, now it's become smaller equipment, but before in the last 10, 15 years before, the gear was much bigger. So you're walking around trying to get the shots of the city and the region, even going into, I've been into 1,000 mosques across the world from Morocco all the way to Indonesia.
Wow.
And of all the places that I've had the most resistance has been in the mosque. And I have to go in very humbly and ask for permission from someone. 50% of the time, I don't get permission or it doesn't work out. But when it does, I always am very quiet and observant and kind. I smile. I don't hardly say a word. I tell you, the power of a smile is huge. And I'll smile and nod my head. And all of a sudden, men that are glaring at me in the mosque will begin to smile back. I've broken that coldness of who is this guy and why is he in our mosque with that camera. And time and again, that is one of the greatest places of resistance, is to actually come into a mosque and with a camera and be a Westerner like I am. And across the region, North Africa and the Middle East, let me say, the Arab people, North African people, are some of the nicest, kindest, greatest people in the whole world. And of course, there are those that are so resistant to Christianity and the gospel of Jesus that they're out doing crazy things like we all would know ISIS is doing now. But for the most part, the people that I have befriended across the region have been wonderful people. I've gotten to know them. I've been in their homes many times or befriended the taxi driver or the person at the front desk. And when I have come in contact with churches in some countries, and I can't really name them. I just came back from one last summer. When I have been with churches, they're under phenomenal pressure. And what that means for the Christians in North Africa and the Middle East is that their faith is relying so solely on Jesus Christ that it's almost like a purer faith. It's a cleaner faith in the sense of they are dependent on Jesus for today and for tomorrow, for the very breath, because everywhere around them, 99.999% around them is Islam. And so it's almost like they are stranger in their own land because of their faith.
Mm. All right, we're talking right now on Vocal Point with Craig Forrest, who's been all over the world as a cameraman and a video producer and director, and his all of his work and whatever, you can learn about him at craigforrest.com, F-O-R-R-E-S-T. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and we're really talking about, in some ways, the ways in which the gospel has made a difference in the world, or the way in which, because there is no gospel presence, things are different. Now, it's interesting, Craig, you were saying a moment ago how you found a lot of hospitality, and I've seen that too. You can find a lot of hospitality in the Middle East, but then if it's known that you're, you know, an out-and-out Christian or whatever, that hospitality can turn to hostility.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. Did you ever go to Saudi Arabia?
I did, but I can't claim that I spent any time there. It was basically a refueling stop, and nobody was allowed.
Right. Okay, so no filming. You've never filmed or videotaped in Saudi Arabia?
No.
Okay.
Have not, although that would be an interesting assignment.
Did you ever get sick?
In any of my travels?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. There's been a couple of times I've been sick, and one time I was sick in West Africa in Senegal. I had a bad meal, and it caught up with me the next day, and I was sick for a few days. And I was sick in India once for about a week, and also in Ethiopia, I think. Just the glass that they had put down for me to drink my soda out of had not been washed properly or hot enough water.
Yeah.
So those are I'm going to tell you though, out of 200 and some assignments, to be sick basically only three times, that's not too bad. You could be sick three times here in America.
Yeah.
So with all the travel, that's not too bad. But when I was sick, I was really sick.
Yes.
And you would rather be home when you're sick at your own bedroom, your own house, your apartment, than to be somewhere in a hotel, or in one case I was sick on the airplane.
Oh.
So, yeah, it just the cost of doing business, the cost of filmmaking.
That is amazing, though. God really helped you through that, because, I mean, even just in my limited travels, for example, in India and Pakistan, I've been really sick that I didn't even know you could be that sick. Now, as far as danger, were you ever in danger? Did anybody ever throw stones at you? Did anybody ever try to shoot you? Were you ever arrested? Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's a good question. Hardly anyone asked me that question, and it's a good one. I did have the kinds of, first of all, when I go out, I do not walk around, it's very rare, do I walk around by myself. I always have a person with me to kind of watch my back.
Make a local. Sure I'm,
yeah, a local, either from the church or for a lot of times we will get, I will get a production coordinator from locally in the country to take me around. They arrange the transportation, et cetera. Anyway, I'll have somebody with me, and the first moment we're starting to work, I will say to that person, if you see somebody come at me, you have full permission to grab my shirt or my shoulder or my arm and get me out of there and explain it later.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, Jerry, I've been through a million markets. I've been on a million traffic circles across this world, and some people, I will tell you, a lot of times, if somebody is a drunk person, is often one of the most dangerous people that I will come in contact with, because they're just crazy.
Yeah.
And I've had a guy come at me with a knife in Dakar, Senegal, but he was drunk and he wasn't going too fast, so I was able to get out of the way. I can sort of laugh about it now, but it wasn't funny back then.
Hmm.
I've had a woman try to push my camera and me down in Marrakesh, Morocco, because I was taking a picture of a person that I had actually paid a little money to, some coins, to take their picture. But a lady in traditional Muslim garb, dressing, walked by and just pushed me in the camera. She was so mad at me. And then I did have a guy in the country of Chad come after me. And also in Chad, they wanted to arrest me for shooting at an outdoor mosque. And I pulled out my press credentials and said, hey, I have every right to be here. And that went on for about half an hour, then they released me.
Oh.
And then one time in India, I was detained at a train station because it was a source of transportation, obviously, and you had to have a special permit to shoot there, and of course I didn't. A lot of places I go, Jerry, I don't have a permit. I just go, I get the shot, and I figure that it's better to ask permission later and say you're sorry than to go jump through all the hoops.
Yeah.
And get all the paperwork necessary in a lot of these countries to go in with permission. There are certain places, though, that you have to be careful. Again, government places of transportation, anything dealing with military, that's a no-go. Don't you dare take photos of that or any kind of footage. But a lot of the other places, you could just say that you're doing a travel video, a documentary on the country, and that's worked for me about 95% of the time.
Huh. I know a cameraman that one time was asked by somebody, what are you shooting this for? And his response was Arbor Day. And the guy was, okay.
Great answer.
Yeah. You should have learned that 20 years ago. Go back to the Marrakesh incident. Is there something within Islam or something, or some aspects of strict Islam where the photographer or, you know, photographs are not allowed or something? What's the deal?
That's a good question. I think, first of all, it has to do with the city of Marrakesh itself.
Marrakesh is in Morocco.
In Morocco, sure.
Yeah.
And it's an absolutely fascinating city. And Morocco can be, if you want to have an adventure and explore a bit, Morocco can be a wonderful, colorful place to go. Just watch your bags, watch your passport and all of that, because there's a lot of crime on the streets, especially in the big cities, not so much the villages. Marrakesh, there have been so many tourists that have come through Marrakesh that it's my belief that in the markets, the souks, the narrow alleyways and such, that so many European tourists have come, that the people have sort of gotten this attitude of, put your camera down, I'm tired of you taking my picture, not giving me any money, who do you think you are? And I just think it's this reticence, this bit of a hostility to cameras and to photography. Unless you're going to pay me $50 for my picture, if you just want it for free, I don't want to have anything to do with you. I took a picture of three older teenage girls in the famous square, Jemaa el Fena, in the heart, the center of Marrakesh. And I said, let me take your picture. And they first said, give me some money. I said, well, let me take your picture. So I had to, took their picture, and as soon as I was done, out came their hands, give me some money. And I gave them some coins, and off they went. But if I hadn't given them at least a couple of coins, they probably would have slapped me. I think there's just a resistance there to so many people over at least the last 100 years with cameras,
yeah,
Jerry, that they just sort of had this attitude.
So, in other words, it wasn't like something within strict Islamic teaching that didn't allow for the camera or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think so. Now, I did a previous shoot in Morocco a couple of decades ago, and we had the full, with the fixers, the production, you know, the production company, the permits and everything. And what we did in that case, one of the guys who was following us or helping us in production was a cameraman. And we showed him how to run the camera. He was already a cameraman anyway, but from film.
Yeah.
So we showed him how to run a video camera. And he went into the mosque and got things and great footage that we could use. Not a lot, but good footage. And came back and we checked it. Absolutely fine. It's one thing for a Moroccan to go
right,
into the camera.
Right.
It's another thing for a Westerner, a foreigner,
sure,
of any type, European or Westerner, especially now. Now it's even more ramped up because of the hostility between Islam and Christianity.
Yeah. Okay, global picture here, global, because we only have a few minutes left. Do you see differences between the Western world, where there at least has been strong Christian influence, at least in the past, and there's still some, obviously, versus, let's say, those countries where there's no Christian influence, virtually?
Well, I'm going to take a little different direction than your question addresses. I will tell you what the big difference is right now across the world. It is digital media and a digital world. In years ago, you might have five channels in a country. They were all government run.
Right.
You know, Egypt would be a great example of that, or to a certain sense, India, etc., or any place that has a strong government leader, dictator, president, king.
Right.
That's all changed. It has all changed in that there are literally hundreds of channels available, either by cable or by satellite. And now you can watch all that, especially a young person who's into entertainment, can watch that on their computer. And they can watch that on their phone now.
Yeah.
And that has changed YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all the ways, Instagram, ways that of connection now have changed how Christianity has gone into countries of the world and vice versa, the Al Jazeera's of the world, where Islam is coming into Christianity in a reverse factor. So the opportunities for the gospel have never been greater than right now. Media has changed everything. Somebody dies in one part of the world within 5 minutes. It's known across the world within 30 minutes. Snap your fingers, and an entire world has the possibility of knowing that that person has passed away, or recently somebody's been executed, or somebody's been killed, or somebody's been kidnapped, an act of violence.
Mm. That's interesting. All right, Craig Forrest. Again, Forrest is F-O-R-R-E-S-T, craigforrest.com for more information.
Good Scottish name.
Good Scottish name. Okay, we have about, let's say, 1 minute to wrap up. What would you like to say in conclusion? Before I ask you that last question, what was the most beautiful place you've been in the world since you've been in 149 countries so far?
Goodness. Well, I'll tell you, my favorite place in the world is Paris, the most beautiful place. I will, you know what?
You shot in Paris for us. You shot Notre Dame, you know, which is a beautiful example of a Christian building, you know, from 1100 something. That's amazing. And then the Sorbonne, that's right. The University of Paris, which is a kind of the prototype of the universities founded again during more Christian times in the past. But okay, so we have we have 40 seconds to sum up. What do you think of multiculturalism?
I would say quickly the two places I think that are the most beautiful I've been to. One would be Cape Town, as far as cities are concerned, and the other one would probably be the Swiss Alps, Italian Alps, with Lake Como up in northern Italy.
Oh yeah,
as far as beauty.
Okay, last 15 seconds. What do you think of multiculturalism in light of your world experiences?
Travel is a phenomenal teacher, and if you will go in and be humble, travel will teach you because you're the foreigner in somebody else's country.
CraigForrest.com. Craig, thanks so much for your memories. Appreciate it.
You